But now it's time for Wisconsin Life. May 6th marks the centennial of the birth of acclaimed director and actor and radio guy, Orson Welles. Although his Wisconsin years are often glossed over or left out entirely, writer Dean Robbins reminds us of the way Wisconsin shaped Welles.
People don't associate Orson Welles with Wisconsin. Even biographers gloss over the fact that the brilliant theater, radio, and film artist was born in Kenosha and schooled in Madison. Welles himself played down the association, calling Kenosha a nasty little Middle Western city. But hold on a minute. Wisconsin surely helped to mold this one-of-a-kind virtuoso. He had formative experiences here as a child. Orson Welles is best known for directing highly personal, visually dazzling films like The Magnificent Ambersons and A Touch of Evil. Each one featured his own flamboyant acting. His masterpiece, 1941 Citizen Kane, is usually cited as the greatest movie ever made.
The decent, ordinary citizens know that I'll do everything in my power to protect the underprivileged, the underpaid, and the underfed.
Welles stars as newspaper tycoon Charles Foster Kane, who mysteriously utters, "Rosebud,
Rosebud,"
on his deathbed. In the film's closing seconds, we discover that the word relates to a crucial childhood memory and is the key to Kane's soul. Anyone looking for a rosebud moment in Welles' own life might focus on the day he attended his beloved mother's funeral in Kenosha at age 9. Given that tragic association, it's no wonder he had mixed feelings about the city of his birth. The world hailed Welles as a prodigy in his early 20s, when he conquered New York theater and terrified the nation with his War of the Worlds radio broadcast.
Strike them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames.
But Wisconsin had recognized his talent long before then. He gained his first public notoriety in the Capital Times when he was all of 10. The newspaper got wind of an extraordinary boy attending elementary school in Madison. It cited his amazing vocabulary and poetic talent, calling him an apparent genius. In the summer after fourth grade, Welles made a big impression at Madison's Camp Indianola. The other campers likely realized he wouldn't be a typical bunkmate when he showed up with his own easel and oil paints. He also told long dramatic stories during camp meetings, to the point where the counselors tried to shut him up. But Orson would not be denied. He begged to put on a one-man show of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Both campers and counselors watched, stunned, as he transformed from one character to another, using vocal inflections and body language.
So I need you. Farewell.
Decades later, an eyewitness still spoke reverently of the astounding summer camp performance. That's how audiences have always felt after experiencing Orson Welles' genius. He later backed off his harsh assessment of Kenosha, calling himself a confirmed badger. I'm thrilled that he considered himself one of us. It makes us automatically essential to the history of 20th century art.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. For more information, visit wisconsinlife.org.
Here to continue the celebration of Orson Welles' birthday is Norman Gilliland, host and producer of old-time radio drama, among other things, here at WPR. Norman, thanks for joining us.
Well, my pleasure, Rob and Veronica.
So we just we heard Orson Welles born in Kenosha. Can you talk a little more about how deep his roots were and how mixed his feelings were about Kenosha?
Well, the roots were pretty deep, actually, because he was named after his great-grandfather and his great-grandfather's brother, who had been prominent attorneys in Kenosha in the late 19th century. And of course, his earliest childhood memories would have been of Kenosha. But I don't think you'd even say he was conflicted about Kenosha. I think he didn't, for whatever reason, like Kenosha. And as you heard, he associated it with his mother's funeral, which, of course, was a sad point in his life in 1924. But once, when challenged or requested by a Kenosha congressman to say something nice about the place, he did say something very nice. But Orson Welles was, I think, always on. You know, you could never tell when he was being Orson Welles and when he was being a character, but he could always just make up something that sounded very eloquent, and so he did for Kenosha. But he also said at one point, I was never ashamed of being from the Midwest or from Wisconsin, just Kenosha. You know, so that's why there's not a, that's why there aren't a lot of plaques, you know, although there is one in front of the house he was born in on 7th Avenue in Kenosha.
I wanted to ask you about that. Let's say you wanted to go on an Orson Welles tour of Wisconsin. Where would you stop?
Some of those landmarks have been lost, like the aforementioned summer camp on the northwest shore of Lake Mendota that he attended in 1925. But the house in Kenosha is still there, 6114 16 7th Avenue. It's a duplex and has been since the early 19th century. It's a charming middle western middle class house in a modest neighborhood.
You know, I don't know if it's so much Kenosha, I wonder, as if as in any place Orson Welles, this larger-than-life figure, had been born, he would see himself as too big for it. If it was New York City or Mars or whatever, his birthplace was going to be a place that he had to leave behind.
We'd already rule out Mars because they were the bad guys in War of the Worlds. But, yeah, he was a person who was, as they say, larger than life. And part of what makes it a little complicated to know these stories of his early years is that he was, above all, a storyteller. And that included stories about his own life. He would make stuff up if it sounded really good.
Like what? Sorry.
Well, there is a story about him in summer camp and how one of the adults at that camp put moves on him, and that he fled camp in a canoe across Lake Mendota and, wow, and wound up in Chicago. But one of his campmates, his actual bunkmate, Lowell Frouch, he said, I think that was just a story he was telling.
Wait, can you get from Lake Mendota by canoe to Chicago?
Very gradually.
It's
a long portage, yeah.
Well, you talked about his aptitude for telling stories. Obviously, that's what he's known for, and you brought some along for us to listen to. You got one from the Shadow.
Yeah, the Shadow. The thing about the Shadow is the plot was the same every week. You know, it was some weird guy who was trying to, like, blow up the whole city or something like that. And the Shadow always came in, invisible, and brought him to account, you know. But Orson Welles, brilliant actor that he was, could make it work every week because he had such intensity as the Shadow.
Now, here's what I want you to do. Keep quiet and watch your chance. Then I want you to cry out that Shadow could solve this crime without half trying.
Aren't you flattering yourself?
Never mind that, Margot. I have a very definite reason for doing this. A lot depends on your getting the crowd to take up your suggestion.
I'll do my best, Lamont. But where are you going?
I won't be far away. Hand me that leather case on the floor.
Right. Here you are. Am I permitted enough womanly curiosity to ask what's in it?
Just a little wiretapping device.
Telephone?
No. Now, Commissioner Weston will be talking over the loudspeaker system in Midtown Hall. Don't be surprised if the Shadow interrupts his speech. Now, remember, Margot, cry out at the psychological moment. Hundreds of lives depend on it.
All right, well, not exactly at the forefront of the women's rights movement there, but Margot is a good sidekick, I guess.
Well, yeah, in fact, and we can maybe get to her if time permits, but that was another sort of Wisconsinite, Agnes Moorhead, who worked and in Reedsburg and went to the UW-Madison, got a master's degree here.
Talk a little more about Orson Welles on the radio. You, of all people, are very familiar with The Shadow and Orson Welles' radio work.
There was nobody better. That's all there is to it. Nobody more versatile. I remember 20 years ago or so, I interviewed Steve Allen, who was very versatile in his own right, and he said as a young radio actor, he put on his best Orson Welles voice, you know, as everybody else did it. He just made it sound as if that was a given. But what Orson Welles had, and at a very early age, we have to remember 1938, War of the Worlds. He was already world famous before that, but even more so after, 23 years old. And he's doing this because he has this commanding voice. He has this ability to grasp any character on the page and make it all work. He could do multiple characters in the same show, narrator, main character, minor character, and he could do the same character over a certain period of time as he did in the radio version of The Magnificent Amberson. So he was playing a 17-year-old, then 20 years later, the same character, older, different voice, different persona even. He just had all the parts. The parts he didn't have, by the way, later on, he wasn't a great businessman, and he was also lousy as a diplomat when it came to business dealings.
How did he come by, you know, this skill as an actor? Was he trained, or is this something he was just born with?
He's mostly born with it. Although later in life, of course, he did get some, I guess, tutoring, but mostly it was just a matter of seeing it and doing it. And, I mean, he just had this incredible innate talent.
We're talking about his Wisconsin connection now, but do you think, in general, Wisconsin has paid enough attention to his Wisconsin roots, his Kenosha and Madison roots?
Well, you know, I think he was, let's say, a Midwesterner, because, again, if you look at, something like Citizen Kane and the whole Rosebud thing. Okay, what's that about? It's about an idyllic life in the West or the Midwest. And Orson Welles, I think, had a bit of that Rosebud in him. You know, he did, I think, consider himself a Midwesterner, although primarily, if you asked him where was home, he would have said Woodstock, Illinois, where he went to this formative boys' school for several years.
Well, Norman, thanks a lot for joining us and celebrating his 100th birthday.
My pleasure, Veronica. Rob?
That was Norman Gilliland, who's been the host and producer of old-time radio drama for 25 years. It airs each Saturday and Sunday night from 8 to 11 on the Ideas Network.
Time takes away, so the story is told. I've asked so many questions.